All set? The regular September meeting of the Cambria Community Services District Board of Directors will come to order. Will everybody please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to our flag and country.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Let the record reflect that we do have a quorum. However, Directors Chaldicott and Funky Ballou are absent. I understand that Director Chaldicott is on vacation and out of the country. Director Funky Ballou should be joining us later in the meeting. So a report from closed session.
At the end of last meeting, we went into closed session, discussed the items listed on the agenda. No final decisions that are reportable were made.
Thank you. Are there any additions, deletions, or pulled consent agenda items?
Yes. We need to remove two sets of minutes under item 7 of the consent agenda, 7B. We want to pull August 25th and the September 2nd, 2005 Board of Directors meeting minutes. Those are incomplete at this date.
Leaving the July 28th meeting.
Correct.
Minutes. Okay. And I am going to pull consent agenda item 7E. We have a request to speak on that matter, so we'll pull it and honor the request to speak. If there are no other additions or deletions to or from the agenda, and if there are no other pulled consent items, the agenda stands as amended. There are no acknowledgments or presentations this evening, so we'll move right into special reports, beginning with the Sheriff's Department report. Is there a representative from the Sheriff's Department here this evening? Apparently not. I hope they're out keeping Cambria safe. We will now have the Water Master Plan Desalination and Water Storage Facilities report from the District Engineer, Bob Gressens.
I don't know why I feel more comfortable standing up than sitting down, but I will go through a few key projects that we've been working on, and feel free to stop me to ask any questions. The first one talks about several subjects that are related to the Water Master Plan EIR and the Build-Out Reduction Planning, because the two are tied linked together. RBF did complete a very initial administrative draft of the Build-Out Reduction Plan, and staff reviewed it, and they are now responding to our review comments. A progress meeting was held with them on September 13th at our office, and we're continuing to the coordination process. The build-out reduction plan is associated with the Water Master Plan EIR because it will be an appendix to that report, and it's going to be used to address the growth-inducing aspects or impacts of the water projects. In parallel with that whole process, the county is completing its public review hearings with the Planning Commission on the Cambria and San Simeon Acres community plans of the North Coast Area Plan. And so we've been monitoring that fairly closely, particularly on how it might pertain to the build-out reduction goals, and commenting periodically on that and attending meetings just to make sure we're up to date on it. We did have a meeting with county planning the other day, and I noted two key points that are bulleted on my report that probably require a little more discussion and thought. And one is on the banking of future water connections, which is part of our old 1981-era coastal development permit that was issued by the Coastal Commission to the CCSD. And that basically says that we can have up to 125 connections maximum per year, and it can accumulate. You know, you can kind of bank them from one year to the next if you don't use them all. And the concern is that if the because of the moratorium, whether or not you can go up to the 125, you know, once the moratorium is released, and what to do if the actual build-out reduction or growth management ordinance calls for a lower growth rate, and how to deal with that difference. So that's one issue that was raised at that meeting. I thought was a fairly significant issue, and it would relate to cash flow analysis, particularly with build-out reduction. If some of that funding from future connections would help fund the build-out reduction, so that needs further discussion. We also need a better understanding of the mixed-use categories and some of the multifamily. There's a lot of discussion about affordable housing, but you know exactly where those numbers fall into and how that ties into the build-out reduction plan, as well as their proposal to use a current 20% set-aside that's required of the same coastal development permit, where we have to set 20% aside for the, and they use public, commercial, and recreational uses in that permit, but the loosely termed visitor-serving category seems to be applied historically on that. So what they're proposing to do is instead of having that as 20%, reduce that to 15% and take that 5% difference and use that for the multifamily and the affordable housing categories, as I understand it. So those are two things that are being discussed at those meetings and being questioned that relate to a CCSD permit. Moving on to the Pine Knolls tank replacement, we had some progress meetings with Boyle Engineering and CB&I Constructors, pre-planning the construction that's pending on that, assuming we make it through the Coastal Commission review for their permit conditions. So in preparation of that, there's a number of conditions that the Coastal Commission issued following their June 9th hearing on the project, where they did approve it with a lower capacity, and the other key constraint was reducing the footprint. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later today on a separate item that I understand was just pulled for a change order on that project. The desalination project, you should have received our initial study and mitigated neg deck on the geotechnical and hydrogeological investigation. We did that because there are some listed species in the area. We want to make sure we were covered with our mitigation measures to avoid impacts, we have a close of comments on that report due by 5 o'clock on the 26th of this month. That's also on our website. It's been on our website for probably over a week or so now, but if you go to Cambria CSD and you look under what's new, there's a link then that takes you right to that report, so people who have that access can look at it that way, as well as coming to the office and looking at our public review copy. This document describes the environmental concerns related to the investigation activities, primarily for soil borings and some geotechnical type testing at the San Simeon State Beach. We're also doing some borings along some potential pipeline routes. Once we get that data, we'll have to assess it for development of project alternatives, and there'll be a separate environmental review process on an overall project EIR, EIS that would include those alternatives. But right now, without the data, we don't know, you know, what to put in there, basically. So we need the data, and we're hoping we can get through that process to get our permits to be able to go out there and do the exploratory activities. The actual CEQA hearing on that is on the early morning of the 29th at 8 a.m. And that's is that at the Vets Hall, Tammy? I'm trying to recall. It's not at the Vets Hall. So it's at Suite 204 next to our office then. Suite 204? Okay. Got to make sure we make that known. Okay. We also gave a brief presentation. I shouldn't say brief because it took us quite a while to get our audiovisual working. But on Thursday evening on the 15th of this month, we were invited to give a presentation to the local chapter of the Sierra Club on the desal project, so we did talk about it then. Appreciate that opportunity. They had a lot of good questions. And I have not heard yet from the Army Corps as far as where they are at specifically on the sign-off of the project cooperation agreement. So I'm waiting anxiously to hear from them. Moving on to the Urban Water Management Plan update, that's another key water project, and I've recently met with Dean Coker, who is a planner that we have under contract to assist us on planning issues, and I've asked him to dig into the Urban Water Management Plan update. We worked on it in March in that time frame and a little bit after that, but the workload just kept me from getting back to it. It's a difficult task for just about all the water agencies this year because they're the Department of Water Resources that reviews these have changed their review requirements. They've made it much more difficult. We were at an AQUA meeting Monday, and a fairly large water agency was describing how difficult it was for them, and they had quite a few more resources than we do as far as applying to getting through that process. So it's a difficult one. We have to keep plugging away at it. It will tie into whether you could qualify for future state grant money, such as the Prop 50 funding that we're going to go for again at the end of this year.
Is it difficult, Bob, because Department of Water Resources makes it difficult, or is it difficult because just it's inherently a difficult process?
They have a new system in place where they actually have developed a bunch of interlinked spreadsheets. And it's difficult for us because we're not a member of the California Urban Water Conservation Council. As I understand, that council promoted water conservation, I think, a decade or more ago. And there was a memorandum of understanding that a number of water agencies signed on to, and that made their reporting a little more onerous on an annual basis, but then they also standardized their reporting, so it made it a little bit easier to get through the urban water management planning process. We do not belong to that, or we were not a signatory to the MOU with that agency, and so our format of our data doesn't match up, and it's hard to separate out the data the way the DWR people want it separated. And plus, if you're not doing one of the 16 best management practices in the manner that they want it to be done, then you have to do a feasibility study to explain why you're not doing it and to go into further justification. So it's complicated, and I know Dean's been working on it. I may also tie in some assistance on the outside from Corollo Engineers. I know they had a person that reviewed some of our earlier work that seemed to specialize in that area as well. So between the two of them, I'm hoping we can work this thing through the process.
Good.
Lastly, the Stewart Street tank project, there's a separate discussion item, and I'll describe that later today. So I'd be glad to answer any questions if there are.
Any questions of the district engineer? Thank you, Bob.
Thank you. Thank you. You're welcome.
John, did you have a question? Yeah, exactly. His plate is very full, and he's a great asset to the district and to the entire community. We'll now move on to managers and board reports, and we'll begin with the general manager's report.
Thank you. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry, there is. Thank you. I don't know that any of the mics are working now. Thank you. Wayne Ryburn, please. Sorry, Wayne.
No problem. I'll try to be brief. I'm representing the North Coast Alliance tonight. And as you know, we've been attending the Planning Commission meetings along with staff and board members, and we wanted to share our impressions very briefly with you. The county continues to oppose the 1% growth rate that staff put in the plan. somebody in upper management has asked them to take it out, is my impression. They oppose your 4650 water meter connections that you've targeted the desal plant for and seem to be holding on that. The draft environmental impact report that they produced with a consultant, and I quote this, lists your build-out reduction program as hypothetical. They don't think there's any meat to it, so you might look at that. The commission itself is skeptical that the build-out reduction program has enough money to fund it, and I think that's coming from county staff as well. The DEIR, which they will review, I think, in the next couple of weeks, is a classic example of taking data and massaging it around to fit the goal that they want, and I'm sure you'll be addressing that. But in that regard, if you look at Chapter 2, pages 7 through 13, the only environmental impact they list, and there are three of them, one is air quality, which they feel is going to be site-specific to a house that's being built and would be temporary and would go away once the houses are all built. They acknowledge that traffic and circulation is an issue, but they limit all their comments to Highway 1 and Caltrans issues. They don't even mention the infrastructure and unpaved roads, narrow roads, no grading and drainage. They don't even issue any comments about that. And finally, their main solution to the impact of new water is have the community conserve more, which I think is kind of funny since we've been conserving for a long time. And then finally, there's no mention of all of Bob's issue here of impact in terms of fire danger and fire mitigation. So I hope you'll really have somebody attack that EIR and be ready when they come forth in a couple weeks. And then finally, I think it's critical if your build-out reduction plan can be presented, hopefully by November, to that commission, because there's lots of confusion about that. They talk among each other, and they don't seem to have any consensus about what's going on. So we'll continue to support you. We're 100% behind you, and we feel staff and everybody's doing a great job. Thank you.
Thank you, Wayne. And while you're there, I'd like to publicly acknowledge and thank you for your efforts in monitoring this process and actually being a resource to all of us and pointing out where the deficiencies are and where the errors are and where the inconsistencies have been in the county's EIR and the community plan that they're working on. It's been very, very helpful. On the build-out reduction plan, we are trying to schedule a town hall meeting for sometime in the mid-October time frame. I assume that's still on the calendar. General Manager is nodding yes. And we are going to brief the community on the different elements of the build-out reduction plan. And then shortly following that, we'll make a presentation to the County Planning Commission. And I understand they're going to be reserving a date for us to do that. I'm always amazed at people who have lots to say about the build-out reduction plan and many opinions on it when they've never seen it. And so I would urge those who are skeptical to come to the town hall meeting and see what we plan to do, read what we plan to do, and then comment on the build-out reduction plan.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Good day.
Please,
Wayne,
Director Goldman.
Yeah, we've both been through this, you know, more than once. It appears to me, and I would like to ask your perception, is this because the 1% reduction has been in place before the moratorium for several years, and there's we were exempted from the 2.3%, which is countywide, because of our the conditions and the problems with water shortage. It sounds to me like this group is, well, I'll ask you just your candid opinion. Are they that concerned or aware of the unique problems we have in this area, and it's not going to be something even with a desal plant that is going to, you know, change nature in a sense? And they're ignoring most of the things that at least they paid some attention to in the previous North Coast plan updates.
Well, it's strange. I've attended these resource management systems meetings with the Board of Supervisors for years, and everything is presented to them. But they always go to water. And they finally, I learned the other day, set the 1% through 2007, excuse me. And the 1% is actually put in the plan draft. And then, a month ago, the assistant director for planning came in and asked that it be taken out because they didn't want it subject to review by the Coastal Commission. So it sounds like they're not talking to each other. So I think you're fighting the county staff is what you're doing, not necessarily at lower level, but at upper levels. And their agenda maybe is cash flow, building permits, I don't know what it is. They're calling it absorption capacity. They think you can absorb more homes here than you have the resources for. And how you overcome that, I don't know.
Joan.
I was thinking maybe Tammy, the general manager, would like to comment. There has been some meeting with the county staff in this last week.
Well, and even today, there's just a difference in how they're calculating the units, the housing units. An example I can give today was the commission's willingness to change or to alleviate the fact that guest houses or garages had to be attached to homes here in Cambria. So they actually approved that they could be detached. And I got approached by a staff member from Slo County telling me that because of that one approval, if this plan goes through and gets approved, that increases the build-out number, because now there's two housing units on one piece of property. And I'm talking about a home and then a potential detached guest unit or a detached garage, because if that main unit ever gets sold and the family moves away, then those become two housing units. That back house or the guest house could be rented. Well, that's not the same philosophy we share here, because there's not two EDU allocations, there's not two water meters for that property, there's just the one. So there's just some semantics that are differing from the district, between the district and the county. So there's several of those types of issues.
For the benefit of those in the audience and those who may be watching a rebroadcast of this meeting on television, about 2 years ago now, the board of directors adopted a growth cap for Cambria, consistent with the infrastructure in this town and its ability to carry a number of additional housing units. That number is 4,650. So the board has made the decision that growth will be capped at that, and that accounts for the existing water wait list, the 3,800 or so existing residential connections, and then a few more water allocations left over for things like affordable housing. It's a serious matter because the county's community plan is at variance with that 4,650 number. And in order for the district here to size the infrastructure, the water storage tanks, the desalination plant, in order to determine how many employees we're going to have at the fire department, so on and so forth, we need to know what the build-out number is going to be. And this board has been very consistent in its insistence that the build-out number is 4,650. So that's why we're having these discussions with the county, and what we would like in a perfect world is for the county's community plan to essentially be a mirror image of the plans that we have made. And we're trying mightily to get the county on the same page with the district. with respect to this 1% growth rate that has been discussed here this evening, that relates to the number of water allocations, the number of intent to serve letters that would be issued by the district after the moratorium is lifted. We have roughly 3,800 residential connections, so if the moratorium was lifted tomorrow and if the growth rate cap was 1%, then we would be entitled to issue 38 residential water allocations, intent to serve letters. There are some very serious financial issues that come into play when you start considering the number of intent to serve letters that will be issued and the period of time over which they will be issued, because many of the infrastructure demands and perhaps part of the lot retirement program that will flow from the build-out reduction study will depend on a stream of income from water and sewer connection fees. So there are many moving parts to this issue. I would urge anybody that's interested in these issues to attend the town hall meeting that we are going to have on the build-out reduction program. I think a lot of the questions you may have will be answered then. Wayne, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. We'll now turn to the board managers and board reports, and we'll begin with the general manager's report.
Okay, thank
Tammy
you.
Ritta.
Under administration, I just want to remind people and the staff that the district offices and our utility operations are going to be closed on Monday, October 10th. This is in observance of the Columbus Day holiday. If there are any utility service problems during that time, customers can call 927-6223 and report those. We do have on-call staff. Under customer service and utility billing, customers might have realized and noticed that their utility bills were late this month. This is as a result of our continuation of the automated meter reading system installation and implementation. Customers may be unaware, as maybe some of the board members, that it's not just a matter of going out and changing out your meter in your yard. There are several technical issues that have to be dealt with on an administrative level in our office with our billing system. We are checking, double checking, triple checking meter numbers, also the automated read equipment to make sure that it's assigned to that particular customer. There are some customers who have reported leaking around their new meters, and we need to be aware of those, and customers are certainly welcome and should notify us immediately so that we can get out there if there is a problem and our field staff are able to make those repairs. We anticipate the whole project being finished by the end of October. So that means this billing cycle we had automated reads and manual reads. So that's another reason for the tardiness of the bills. So we've got two systems running concurrently with each other. So on the bill, the customers may notice that the bill due date still says November 10th. And we did that so we didn't have to reprogram our billing system to change it. We are authorizing, and there's a little message down on the lower left-hand corner of the utility bill that says we've extended the payment due date, this billing period, to October 10th earlier. So October 17th is our extended bill payment due period today, or this month, for the utility bills. Customers are also welcome to see that notice on our website. We have notices printed in the office so that if customers come in, we take the opportunity to remind them that their bills are due a little bit later this month, and that's just to try to coincide with the time that they went out. We do appreciate everyone's cooperation, assistance, and understanding during this process. It probably and could possibly occur for the next couple of billing periods. We have released our contract with our meter reading company. So as of next billing cycle, it will be our staff who's reading the meters on an automated level. There will still be some commercial meters that are going to be manually read, which are already on a manual basis until we decide when that implementation of turning those over to automatic read will be. So I once again just make the announcement for the public's benefit and customers that if there's any problems with the meter, if you notice any increased consumption, just to be aware that with a new meter, there might be a little slight uptick in the consumption because the newer meters are going to read a little bit more accurately than the older meters, which tend to run a little bit slower as they age or not register the water as accurately. But please feel free to call our office, and that gives us an opportunity to go out and investigate or check the situation over. As far as the Incorporation Citizen Committee, I decided and talked with the chairperson to give just a brief report. They're pretty organized, and I attended their, not their last meeting, that was last week, but the one before that, and they were presented with a draft of the service level analysis on August 22nd. Our consultant, Andy Belknap, who's working with that committee of management partners, has finalized the report. That has been distributed to each of you. We haven't put that on the website or made it public yet because the committee wants to take this in steps in order to present it publicly, just because there are some other things they want to get accomplished. I list those tasks. They're publishing some articles in the local newspaper in the Cambrian, and I believe they may be shooting for the Trib in one of them. And one ran last week, and I know that the chairperson, Greg Bates, was in our office yesterday working again with staff to try to get the next one or the next couple ready and in the pipeline to get published. They also want to do a constituent polling when we send out our next utility bill, and they're aiming for or targeting the November time frame. They want to have an opportunity to prepare and publish an executive summary of what their committee has accomplished, what their objectives were, and then also in line with the service level analysis report. And then their goal is to present the report and their findings and recommendations in our open session regular board meeting on December 15th. And that's an evening meeting, and they thought maybe that it would be better then so that there may be more constituents who might be interested in being able to attend. So that's just a status report on the Incorporation Committee. Under Parks and Recreation, at the last meeting, there was just the one item. The PROS Commission had their meeting on September 8th. Jim Ellman, the chairman, reviewed the draft PROS Commission review and recommendations that they want to present to the Board of Directors with regard to the Parks and Recreation Ad Hoc Committee report that was presented and dated in July 2005. They agreed and discussed it to make a few modifications and have forwarded it in a final format, which we have distributed to you all. And then Jim is available to present that the findings and the recommendations at the October 27th board meeting. I listed a little special section here in this report on upcoming special meetings, just so that the public is clear. President Sanders mentioned the workshop or town hall meeting or special board meeting that we're going to have on Wednesday, October 12th. And that's at 6 o'clock p.m., and that will be here at Vets Hall. And that is, he gave a great description. It's a briefing on the build-out reduction program. Again, that date's Wednesday, October 12th at 6 p.m. here at Vets Hall. There won't be any copies of the report available. I got approached today at the Slo County Planning Commission meeting by a couple of constituents. It will be a briefing because we're working very closely with RBF Consulting to get the report in a final format. And that will be accomplished at the October 27th board meeting, where the report will be available and we'll seek again some more public input. This is just an introduction, a briefing to get it out there and to get some feedback from the public. At the same time, I received confirmation today from the Slo County Planning Commission staff that they are going to slot us on their Thursday, October 13th Planning Commission agenda to also have a 30-minute presentation by RBF Consulting and our staff on the build-out reduction, and in a similar format. It's probably going to be a little bit more in-depth here in our community just because of the time limitation at the county. So that meeting is Thursday, October 13th in the Government Center in San Luis Obispo, and that meeting begins at 8:45. And RBF and CCSD staff will be available there for that presentation. Bob Gressens mentioned earlier our special board meeting for the hearing on the initial study and the mitigated negative declaration for the geotechnical and hydrogeologic investigation. That's going to be held on Thursday, September 29th. That's at 8 a.m., and it is in our district suite 204. This facility was not available, and we do have that scheduled and slated for suite 204. I was also informed today, and staff was aware, that next Thursday, September 29th, that same day, the Slo County Planning Commission is hoping to finish up with Chapter 7 of the draft local coastal plan. And it's actually a special meeting that they're holding just for this. They've got it slated all day, starting at 8:45 until 4:30 p.m.
What's that date, Tammy?
That's next Thursday, September 29th, in the Government Center. And I just want to make sure the public's aware, Wayne's aware, everybody, that that's just for the North Coast Area Plan. So they want to try to get it finished or close to being finished. There is an item that's going to be on the agenda that they anticipate lasting 45 minutes right at the beginning of the meeting. So staff is estimating about a 9:30 start time for next Thursday. Okay, that's a lot of meetings. I just want to make sure those are all clear. And if anybody has any questions, they can certainly see me at break. I did try to attempt to get some San Luis Obispo County staff members here to report on a couple of projects that are going on in Cambria. Unfortunately, their schedules were filled for tonight in Los Osos, and another one was off in another community. So next month, I've gotten tentative confirmation from Dave Flynn to come and report on, at the October board meeting, about the status of the Main Street Enhancement Project. I also received email confirmation from Dean Benedict that he will be present here to report on the flood control project, and that's at the October 27th board meeting. And we had, there were several staff members that attended the Aqua Region 5 meeting in Santa Barbara this past weekend, and I'm very proud to announce, and on behalf of you all, that Don Villeneuve was elected to our 7-member Region 5 Aqua Board. He will begin serving his 2-year term on January 1st of 2006. Right now, he's filling an unexpired term, but he was elected with 6 others to finish or to actually be on the new board starting on January 1st.
And he volunteered for that.
He volunteered, absolutely.
We have to question his judgment.
Well, I was protected because when they were Tammy's on that
the nominating committee,
and they were
conflict of interest.
No. They're kicking around who they could stick with being president and vice president. And my name was mentioned.
And she saved.
She protected me.
You were saved.
Good. Very good.
Last but not least, we will be bringing next month a resolution to you to support implementation of the Blueprint for California Water that has been prepared by Aqua Agencies. We'll have a resolution on your board agenda at the October meeting. And that is all.
Any questions of the general manager? Thank you, Tammy, very much. We'll now have the fire chief's report. Chief Putney.
Good evening.
Oh, excuse me.
Good evening.
I'm sorry. I meant to bring up Joellen Butler. I apologize, Joellen. Every quarter I promised you to bring a status report from North Coast Swap.
Joellen, come on up.
I certainly overlooked it. I didn't mean to, so she's here.
I thought I might come after the fire chief.
I wrote a report for you.
Thank you.
And I'm going to start off with just letting you know that North Coast Swap did finish the monitoring on East West Ranch for this year, and Tammy has a copy of our monitoring plan if any of you want to read it. It's just, basically visiting the same places that we visited in the baseline study and seeing the effect of use on the property. And basically, it's looking pretty good, but you do have a copy of that now. On the Lions parking and the conservation easement, we spent a lot of time upholding the conservation easement on the East-West Ranch, and it was a big issue, and we also helped provide signage for parking the weekend of the event to direct people to Rodeo Grounds Road, and we understand that it all went very well, and we're really glad to hear that. We're glad it went well for the Lions. On the cell tower, I spoke again with Tricia Knight from the new Singular and also Lauren LaJoy, and she's the county consultant on the project. And they had to reconstruct all the drawings for the new project. The drawings are done now. There's only one person who can do the visual analysis for the for the project, and he's getting married next week, and he's also very busy. He's the only person that's certified by the county to do this. And so as soon as he can get to it, then the visual analysis will be done, and it'll go to the planning department after that. We placed a new bench along the Bluff Trail on West Ranch, dedicated to the community of Cambria by Noel and Mary Smith. They were major donors to the purchase of East West Ranch. And we have one more bench to place, and we hope to get that done next month. The plaque, we've got a big boulder donated to put the plaque on for the 5,000 and up donors for the East West Ranch. ALC is still working on the plaque, and it's not done yet. I'm going to be going over the list of people who will be on that plaque and making sure that it's right, and then they'll go forward with it. On the trail projects, North Coast Swap really appreciates being part of both the Santa Rosa Creek Trail project and the Bluff Trail project. The Santa Rosa Creek Trail, we just did a walkthrough and will be part of the opening ceremonies for that. And the Bluff Trail we've been a part of from the beginning. We've been really fortunate to be able to review every step of the way, and we feel it's going to be a really good project when it starts, hopefully, the beginning of October. And we'll be managing the volunteers who are moving building materials, and we'll be keep tracking volunteer hours for the match to the Coastal Conservancy grant on that. Our new work days are the first Wednesday of each month and the third Saturday of each month. They start at 9 o'clock, and we meet in new places each time, and I email a list of volunteers about those work days. If anybody wants to volunteer for those work days, they can call the North Coast Swap office at 927-2856, and I'll add you to the email list, and I do have a small phone list as well. Our last work days were September 14th, and we pulled mustard on the south end of the Bluff Trail again, and then our September 17th workday, we turned over to be part of the coastal cleanup, and it's the first coastal cleanup that has happened on East West Ranch. And we had 16 volunteers. We picked up, I think, 24 pounds of trash, 2 pounds of recyclables. But really, the ranch was very, very clean compared to other areas where they did a coastal cleanup. And a lot of that is due to the people who walk the ranch. They tend to patrol it and pick up trash on a pretty regular basis. So we're really fortunate to have people out there doing that. On the Thanksgiving planting that we did last year, our survival rate is really pretty good. It's much, much better than the year before. And that's mostly due to the fact that we mulched the plants, and we've done a supplemental watering. We've done 3 waterings. The CDF has helped us with the last 2 waterings. They brought out a 500-gallon tank and actually done the watering for us from that tank. We just kind of go around and make sure that everything's really well watered. We really would like to thank them in this public forum for doing that for us. You know, not only do they respond to all the emergencies in the town along with the fire department, they're really interested in maintaining and expanding our urban forest, and this is part of the service they're doing towards that. We'll be working with the Cambria Land Conservancy again this year doing our Thanksgiving planting. It's scheduled for November 27th this year, and we'll have a little announcement in the newspaper and in our newsletter as well. And it's a fun event every year. We usually have some kids. Hopefully we'll have more kids this year. It's nice to get them involved. And it's a great event, and music. And do you have any questions?
Yes.
Thank you. Any questions of Joel?
Do we have a date for the celebration of the Santa Rosa Creek Trail opening? Or
it's not finalized yet. We think that it might be October 7th.
Okay, so we'll get that
information out.
Yeah.
Connie's still working on trying to get not only just a celebration, but a little tour, a little hike, and we're coordinating that with a couple of agencies. So we'll get that notice out as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Any other questions of Joel and Butler? Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Now we'll have the fire chief's report. Chief Putnam.
You have my report in front of you, so I'll just highlight some key points. Since the first of this year to September 15th, we've done 107 fire plan reviews. So again, remodels pretty active in Cambria. One of the things that I wanted to make sure residents were aware of tonight is that Cambria has had an unusual overcast and foggy year. With that, often local residents believe that the vegetation is still fairly moist and is pretty resistant to wildland fire, which is actually not the case. Even though we do get a dusting of fog, it doesn't take much sun or wind to take that dusting moisture away, and the vegetation is still dry. A lot of the green vegetation we have is extremely combustible and will burn with a lot of alacrity. So we ask people, even though it appears foggy and things appear green and all looks well here, that we are in our vulnerable part of the year. So please be careful, especially with warming fires, barbecues, and on a cold night, sometimes people will start up a chimney or potbelly stove or a freestanding heater inside that produces sparks, and they have not checked a spark arrestor in a while. So just be careful and make sure that you're safe during this dry part of the year. Under fire investigations, we have no open or pending fire investigations. We recently had three fires in Cambria that are in this report. Two of them were residential structure fires. One of them was a microwave oven that malfunctioned in the kitchen. It went up the flue pipe and basically extended to the attic and did quite a bit of damage to the house. In modern day, it's interesting, we learn a lot as firefighters, but the residents can learn a lot as well, is that most modern flue pipes that bring air into a residence or allow things to be exhausted that aren't high heat are plastic or PVC in construction. And this vent pipe for the, you know, above the hood area, actually the plastic pipe caught fire, and that extended the fire both into the kitchen and up into the attic, so it added to the fire pit. Another fire was an oven that malfunctioned in a residence, and the fire was confined to the oven. And we had a commercial structure fire down the street at a restaurant where a large amount of grease accumulation in the hood caught fire. However, because of construction that was required in an extinguishing agent system, the wall of the pipe was required to be have enough airspace in it that the heat did not transfer to the building. There was no damage to the building. It just discolored the pipe, and then the hood system went off underneath and helped to contain and control the fire. I told you this month I would have some basic results from our 8th annual Cambria Fire Safe Focus Group and Cambria Fire Department Chipping Weekend. This was the first time in the history of Cambria we did two chipping events in 1 year. The totals are on your sheet. Residents spent 562 hours cutting and piling the materials that we chipped. Our personnel and the California Department of Forestry helped out. We also had the California Conservation Corps. We had our Fire Safe Focus Group members who spent 258 hours chipping. And the bottom line is we chipped 152,500 pounds of material. When you add that to what we did earlier this year, we have a fairly healthy total. We did 162 sites this year over the two events, 166 and a half tons, or 332,500 pounds. 1,052 total hours were done by residents, and 708 chipping hours were done basically by staff who were involved in it. This does not include one single hour at all in our fire hazard fuel reduction program, which is probably several thousand hours just in the part of our department. So this is just the two chipping events. So pretty sizable Herculean effort, and we appreciate everybody's participation and hope there'll be more people sign up next year. We'll continue to have two chipping events every year. Lastly, just a couple things here. We have been working in the department to complete our hydrant maintenance and make sure all the hydrants are working and make sure there's a blue dot. That's on the report. If you have any questions regarding that, We've changed and improved our training and procedures regarding our vehicle operations and checkout to make sure that your fire department maintains an ever-vigilant state of combat readiness so that when we're called upon, our equipment and our personnel can be the best that they can and respond in a timely manner. We are working towards that final goal where we really have a date now that I feel will be the first quarter of next year to have a to go and what do we need to do. The basic information I can give them tonight would be is that the county, the state of California, and most of this nation is looking at 40 to 50 foot either wave crest or wave height. So if people live under 50 feet of elevation above sea level, they simply need to move to higher ground. And if you would like to be awarded with the Darwin Award from the Cambria Fire Department, if you hear that there's a tsunami wave coming, you'll probably get one if you're standing down the coast looking for it to arrive, because that's where we will not be. We will quickly go down there and warn people, but we're going to high ground. And no, we haven't bought any Darwin Awards yet, but that can be worked out. Our North Coast Ocean Rescue Team has ordered our boat. We're waiting for it to come into Los Angeles. It will be shipped by truck here, and then our next goal is to purchase a motor for it, modify the trailer, and begin training so that as this winter's storm season comes up, that that we have a new boat, that we will be our first outboat. We will move our first outboat to second outboat. We will sell our backup boat, which has not proved to be as dependable or seaworthy or safe as we initially hoped it to be. So with that, I'll answer any questions.
Chief, in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina and possibly in the aftermath of Hurricane Rita, we don't know yet, it's obvious that there's not only the potential for enormous property destruction, but in the aftermath of a disaster like that, many people are often essentially homeless, their homes having been destroyed or are otherwise not capable of being occupied. And reflecting on the experience of 10 or so years ago in Oakland with the Oakland Hills fire, I suppose it's more than theoretically possible that if we had a major fire in Cambria that we could have a lot of people who are faced with the prospect of having nowhere to go. And certainly, if we were unlucky enough to suffer from a tsunami, that would be the case. Having said that, and realizing that the first responders are those at the local level, like our fire department, and are often left with having to either create the logistics or to implement the logistics for taking care of people who are displaced. I'd like to see over time some kind of a comprehensive program put together for Cambria where we have some provisions on hand. We have the ability to house people. Perhaps we can have a registry of persons who live in town who would be willing to share their homes with those who are displaced for some period of time so that we don't have what amounts to a diaspora of people who have to move away and perhaps never to return. I think we owe them at least the luxury of housing them if we can for some period of time. We don't have a whole lot of money. We don't have much in the way of physical assets to work with, but consistent with the spirit of this community, perhaps through volunteer efforts, we can put together a program that makes a lot of sense and would ease the burden for people who might find themselves displaced. So over some period of time, hopefully not an extended period of time, but maybe a few months, if some sort of a program can be put together for the board to consider, I think that would come in very handy in case we have a major emergency here.
Yeah, that would be great. I would love to work on that. The other thing that I would like to say is that It's very easy for anyone, both in the civilian world or in my position, to look at what's happened in the Gulf Coast in the United States and lay blame. I think there are a lot of things going on very positive in our community. We have a very active CERT program, which activates resident citizens and gets them out on the street and helping people who are shut-ins and can't move. We've actively asked people to make sure that they store enough drinking water for 4 or 5 days and that they have disaster supplies at home, and then they have the cash. And we also have a great system. A lot of people refer to California as the theme park for disasters. This is the Wally World and the Disneyland for disasters in California. So California has experienced the disaster plans time in and time out. And if I placed a call to Tammy Rudolph and got her approval, she notified you, we would immediately call County OES and we would have transportation.
I'm here, and that's due to the fact that we're using Santa Rosa and trying to balance the load in both basins. Regardless, we're going to make sure that Santa Rosa Creek runs 24/7 just like it has for the last 5 years. And that's our main plan. That's our operation goal, to keep water in it at all times and protect habitat in that creek. But it does help out on the San Simeon, as you can see. I'd also point out that the well gradient's the same. I mean, we're positive, so we don't have to worry about infiltration or backflow or anything like that. On solids dewatering and the screw press, we've taken a real close look at the two bids that we came in, and the first contractor that we had there, that was the apparent low bid, unfortunately had some problems with their proposal. Number one, they didn't have a Class A license, and that was protested, and amongst quite a few other things. And so it was a consensus that we go along with Specialty and enter into some negotiations with them and try to final this project up. And so we'll be meeting with them next week and trying to wrap this thing up and getting it going. Automatic meter reading, Tammy hit on that. We won't be using them again, hopefully forever. And that saves us about $4,000 every reading period, so that's in perpetuity. Also, a couple things on the Santa Rosa Creek Trail. We're almost finished with that. There's some split rail fencing that went along the Green Creek Bank restoration, and people ought to check that out. It looks really nice. It's a real good style fence along there. But we're running into a problem with getting the decomposed granite rolled out. And it needs to be watered down before it's rolled, so we might not roll it until after the first rain. That doesn't mean it can't be used until then. It has kind of a mound in it. It looks like an old two-lane country road with a crown in it right now. But after we roll it, it'll be flat. District computer system, we've been working on that. We've disconnected Charter from the system, and now it's all wireless. Still got a few little bugs in it we're trying to iron out, but that'll save a lot of money over time as well. And that's it.
Thank you, Brian. Any questions of the utilities manager? We'll now have the finance officer's report. Patrick Bradley.
Thank you, President Sanders, members of the board. You have my report in front of you. I'll just briefly gloss over a few things. District audit, we have completed the audit. In fact, yesterday morning we had the exit conference with the auditor. We anticipate having the final audit presented to you at the December board meeting. I have submitted and attached to my report a list of the CIP projects that we're working on. And I did this for two reasons. One is to show that we are really actively moving on these projects. And synonymous with the active movement on the projects, of course, it means we're spending the money to do so. So our reserves have dropped. In fact, we used $2.1 million in water reserves just to fund the activity that happened for the last fiscal year. And lastly, I would like to just mention on the property tax, and we've got an agenda item coming up for a budget amendment on some general fund items. I have not had the official confirmation from the county that I usually get related to our property tax estimate. They're still kind of going through a few things. However, they have indicated that our estimate that was presented earlier to you is a realistic estimate, and they don't see much deviation from that. So that concludes my report. Are there any comments or questions?
Any questions of the finance officer? Thank you, Patrick, very much. We'll now move to member and committee reports. Director Coben, I believe you have a Park and Rec ad hoc committee report.
Yes, well, I did read the, we had asked PROS Commission to, whoops.
Sorry. we had asked the PROS Commission to review that report, and I have read their report. They've done it very well. I'd like to suggest, however, that we postpone further discussion on the ad hoc Parks and Rec report until after the build-out study is made public, because the financing issues pretty much overlap in that. On the other hand, I do believe that for the October agenda, we should deal with the part where the ad hoc committee recommended the procedure for appointing new PROS members. We've been slow in getting that done. I think the commission now has asked us to replace the people whose terms have expired. So if we could have that on the agenda and then save the whole report till later date.
Is there any objection to the ad hoc committee's recommendation? The staff will come back then with a report on appointing new commissioners at the October
meeting. PB and I bid this project last fall after we had gone through a CEQA review process and so forth on the project. It is a top priority water project. After we received an emergency construction permit, we'd issued them a notice to proceed. We subsequently got stopped by a cease and desist order from the California Coastal Commission, citing that they wanted us to go through a more formalized coastal development permit process. So we stopped work at that time, went through that process, got the conditions and the findings following a February 10th meeting with the Planning Commission. Then had an appeal filed on the 16th of March against that, and we went through two subsequent hearings with the California Coastal Commission, one on April 14th in Santa Barbara and a second one on June 9th in San Pedro. And at that June 9th meeting, they did approve the project with special conditions. And the two key conditions that were part of that mix was decreasing the tank volume to approximately 934,000 gallons and also minimizing the allowable footprint that went beyond our existing property line. And that was mainly the northeastern expansion area that was the main point of contention mentioned in the earlier appeals. What we did to abide by those conditions is come up with the design that's on the overhead behind you. And if I could borrow that pointer. We have a bit of a conundrum with phasing the project by reducing the footprint. The past project, we were out here further, which allowed us to avoid the two existing tanks. There's one existing tank shown kind of cross-hatched here and one existing tank shown cross-hatched here. To reduce the footprint out here, we came up with a temporary tank here, which allows us to take this tank out while we build this tank, the larger tank, first. And that reduced the area. It added expense to the project. We looked at about at least four different arrangements for the temporary tank. One was a bolt-together tank. That was the most expensive, over $100,000. We looked at a special liner tank that's for temporary construction. That was in the $80,000 to $90,000 range. We looked at these pillow tanks that the Army uses that are like large bladder tanks you lay on the ground. They're too large to fit on the site for our volume need. We went through all those actually yesterday with our contractor or engineer. At that point, I thought it was a very good meeting. The contractor in particular, the Dan Butler, their project manager, had some ideas from his experience, and one of which was to go inside the existing tank and brace it internally. It requires some finesse work on operations, and the fact we're a little bit later in the year now on this project, it helps not being in the summer months. But it'll be very critical that we empty the tank, go through some special operating practices that we're still figuring out with water operations, but brace the inside of that tank and then have a crane lift it and move it over to the point where we show the temporary tank. So we basically will be modifying this existing tank in a very short window of time. It's still going to take at least 5 working days, most likely. Limp along on this tank while we're going through some special operations, and then lift and move it over to here after we prepare a foundation there. And as a result of that, the cost will come down substantially. It's difficult to pin this down to exact cost because of the risk involved. Some of the key risks are the bottom of the tank falls out when you pick it up, or an old weld snaps and you have to patch it. CB&I, being a tank contractor and having a lot of experience in this area, gives me a little bit of a comfort level that they'll have some backup provisions and welders on site if that were to occur, so we can get that tank back online in a hurry. But with this approach, the costs are going to be closer to approximately the $30,000 range. Now, that, because of the risk and the unknowns, we're recommending a time and material basis for this change order. So it may come down. It could go up. For example, if the crane ends up out there longer than we thought, then the cost would go up. If it did go up, we would have to continue with the work. As of this last summer with the staff, with their three-tank arrangement.
The Coastal Commission staff.
Yeah, the Coastal Commission staff, thank you. That would have required substantially more area the way they had thought it would lay out, but with the turning radiuses that are required for fire trucks and so forth, it would have actually required substantially more, right, more area than that. So,
thank you.
Okay. Welcome. Thank you.
I have a request to speak form on this item from Wayne Gracie. Wayne?
Good evening. I'm Wayne Gracie, 984 Manor Way, and I'm speaking to you tonight regarding the approval for additional funds for the Pine Knolls Water Tank Project. And I have 3 points I'd like to make. Number one, CCSD does not have a permit yet for the project and should not be approving additional funds for a change order until it gets final approval. Last time, CCSD jumped the gun and was stopped by the Coastal Commission. The Coastal Commission did not approve a permit at its last meeting with a different project before it. Just because Coastal staff supports it does not mean it will be approved by the Commission. CCSD Board has a fiduciary duty not to authorize the spending of money on projects that have not been permitted. Number two, the latest design, 4A, has not received any CEQA review and has significant environmental impacts not analyzed in the prior mitigated negative deck. Therefore, further CEQA review needs to be done before proceeding with any action or permit approval for this latest project. For example, both the landscaping and drainage mitigation measures in the negative deck approved by the county in its coastal development permit are impossible to implement now due to design changes. The impact of the relocated PG&E easement was never considered. Shadows on residences are not considered. Therefore, the project as it stands is flawed. Number three, the board has a fiduciary duty to not proceed with a plan it knows is flawed because of non-compliance with CEQA and has mitigation measures that are impossible to implement. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. I'd like to correct one misapprehension. There has been a permit issued for this project. The Coastal Commission issued a permit, approved a permit at its June meeting in San Pedro. So there is a coastal development permit that has been approved by the Coastal Commission. Would the district engineer like to respond further?
Yes, thank you. I know there's several submittals we still have to do with the staff at the Coastal Commission to get the final approval. So I think I understand what Mr. Gracie is saying with regard to that. The layout matches pretty much the conditions that the staff has relayed to us. So it's really the drainage plans and some other points that Boyle's working on that we have to process through them, as well as some more details to back this up. So,
just to be clear, the Coastal Commission did approve a coastal development permit. It's subject to final site plan approval by the staff. The purpose of that review is to make sure that the site plan conforms to the conditions of approval that were imposed on the project by the Coastal Commission. But there is a coastal development permit that has been approved for this project. Please.
Yeah, thank you, Wayne Gracie. Again, I do have just a response to that. I know that there is a coastal development permit issued, but it also was based on a previous plan with mitigated negative deck requirements that were in that, which I don't believe can be implemented with this new design. And
no, it was not based upon a previous plan. What the Coastal Commission did is the Coastal Commission established a set of parameters and imposed those parameters as conditions of approval on the coastal development permit and required that the district simply submit a site plan consistent with those parameters to the staff so the staff can review it and make certain that the site plan conforms to the coastal development permit that was approved by the commission, and particularly the conditions of approval of the coastal development permit.
I understand.
So it has been approved.
Okay, but the Coastal Commission has issued a permit?
Yes.
You have a Coastal Commission permit?
Yes, we do.
Is that correct, Bob?
Yeah, I have a document in the office I could share with you. I'm trying to remember how they entitle it. I think it's like a notice of intent to permit, and there's conditions attached to it that calls out that prior to issue of a actual, I think they call it a construction permit,
right.
But there's a drainage plan that has to be submitted and a couple of submittals that are required.
But, and how do you plan to mitigate the points that were brought up in the...
And again, it's a legal question, and maybe I have to defer to Mr. Montanen, but I know that we raised these issues with them in our response in the past, leading into that June 9th meeting. And as I understand the process, and I'm going to look to Art for some assistance on the right choice of words here, but they pretty much take over the project at that point and have a final say on how this thing gets conditioned.
Would the district council like to weigh in on this?
Yes, I believe the staff report of the Coastal Commission talks about this at the very end, if you have a copy of it or if you want to access it online. It states in that staff report that approval of coastal condition permit at coastal development permits at their level is part of a regulatory program and therefore needs no further CEQA review, and that their process is the review required under the code. That's statement is set forth in a regulation, I believe they cite in that last paragraph. And we reviewed and looked at that, and it's correct. Though it isn't the normal process we see at the local level, it's the process that has been followed and is embodied in a regulation at the state level.
I see. Still, I just have to question all the time and effort was put into the CEQA review documents, the public hearings. We had commented a number of times. We have neighborhood, meetings and comments. There were mitigations put into the permit that was to satisfy drainage, landscape mitigation, view sheds, things like that. And now, from the plans that I see up here that are going to be approved by the Coastal Commission, a number of those items can't be implemented. And that's just my concern. I think the public should know about that. How can they just approve the permit without the mitigation factors? That's all my only concern. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, is there a motion to approve this consent calendar item?
I would so move. I see no reason to delay approving the added funds, because obviously they won't be spent if the project doesn't go forward. But so I would move that we.
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve consent calendar item 7E as explained by the district engineer. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. The
General Manager will now read the balance of the consent calendar items.
Okay. 7A is to approve the expenditure report for the month of August 2005. 7B is to approve the minutes of the Board of Directors meeting for July 28, 2005. 7C is to adopt Resolution 53-2005, authorizing position description collection system supervisor assigned to Andy Dreyfus. And 7D is to adopt Resolution 50-2005, authorizing a contract agreement with D.W. Alley and Associates.
Is there a motion to approve the balance of the consent calendar?
Yes, I move that we adopt the consent agenda.
Been moved and seconded to adopt the balance of the consent agenda, items 7A through D. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. We'll now move to regular business. The first item on the agenda is to receive a status report on the Stewart Street Water Storage Tank Project. Bob, this is your night.
And just for the public's information, there were no hearings or appeals this month.
No hearings
or
appeals.
I didn't get any water bill months.
Right.
Thank you, Carlos. Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. At your last meeting in August, you requested that I outline an approach to completing the Stewart Street tank project. In your packet, there's a brief schedule outline that I'll describe and how that could be accomplished. Basically, we would start off with a contract with a design consultant. That's the first few tasks that you see. They would then, in turn, complete a preliminary design to provide enough detail to produce an environmental clearance document. But, depending on what the initial study determines, that determines the level of the environmental clearance document. And let me just borrow that pointer again, Carlos. Should have held on to it. The top. I'm a little dangerous with this thing. The top task here are showing just developing a scope of work with a design consultant, developing a design contract for the engineering, and then doing the preliminary design. Ignore the arrows. It's part of the program when I print this thing. I didn't mean to make it so. And your permitting before you can construct. I've split the design up a little bit to show a final design stage that actually has to incorporate some of the permitting conditions. Based on our experience, at least with Pine Knolls, I've estimated at least a year for permitting on this project. Bidding would follow once all the permits are in place. And the design is 100% finalized based on the permits. And then construction would probably take approximately 1 year. Could be a little less depending on when they actually start. Contract for a tank project could be 10 months, but if you're in the middle of the rainy season when you award it, you might lose it several months due to the wet conditions and so forth. So just estimated a year. But based on that, we're showing a completion date roughly in 2009, and it's a fairly long process, mainly because there's property rights involved as well as permitting in a sensitive area, and I think that's going to drag it out. So I would be glad to answer questions at this point if you have any. Well, that pretty much concludes my report.
Any questions of the district engineer? Director Coben.
That sounds like this is the maximum time, so if property acquisition went faster, and the permitting process might go faster, so it's conceivable it could be done faster, but
becoming more of a pessimist.
Our experience.
Battered, bloodied, and bound.
Yeah, I'm always optimistic.
With the final water tank process
and,
almost behind you.
Property rights are always a long process. If it has to go to eminent domain, you have to get on court calendars, and there's all sorts of things that end up dragging that out.
Bob, when do you anticipate getting the design work started, the reconnaissance work
well,
that you have to do.
Well, you
so
can
forth.
See we need to start. I mean, it's right. I put down October board meeting to at least start working on the scope of work and maybe get something in place by, say, December, that time frame, roughly.
Okay. Any other questions of the district engineer? There's no action required on this item, so we thank you for the report, Bob.
Thank you.
The next item on the agenda is to receive a report and presentation by the PROS Commission on the district's recreational survey, and Steve Figler is here tonight to make that presentation. Steve, welcome.
Thank you. Actually, this is the report, the entire report, and that's actually been at CCSC for a while, so I imagine this is a formal process. And let me just clarify at first that the purpose of the study was to find out what Cambrians do recreationally and what they want. Any sort of pragmatic concerns or building or anything like that happens is really is separate from this study. And also to point out that our survey is consistent with the community forum that was held on May 19th of this year, and in particular it's consistent with three of the recommendations that came out of that in Appendix A of that meeting. The recommendation, the primary recommendation was to identify recreation needs. Also to fill gaps in the population served. Are we serving well or underserving each age group and each segment of our population? And third, to eventually, in light of these other things, provide a comprehensive program for the whole town. And I'm just going to go over a very few highlights of the study. 3,985 surveys were sent out with water bills last year, actually around this time of last year. And 943 surveys came back, which is roughly 25%. With this kind of a survey, a one-shot survey, that's quite good. They're accessible to and usable by people who are older and or infirm. The most surprising aspect of it was that 27% of the respondents identified a lap pool. That's surprising, and I suppose in light of financial concerns, a little dismaying, but the purpose of the survey was to find out what people do and want, and what they want is a lap pool, in addition to these other things. So, as I say, the survey itself is already in your hands, and if there are any questions, I'll take them. If not, I'll go home.
Any questions of Steve Figler?
Mm-hmm.
Director Coben?
Not so much questions, but I'm delighted that it's now completed and made available to the public. And what I enjoyed about it wasn't so much the large numbers, but the broad spread of things that people wanted. And it seems to me that we need to attend to that as well. If there's a small set of people that really want a certain activity, that we should try to accomplish that as well.
Right.
For instance, soccer fields, it's only a small number of children and older adults perhaps that play, but it's an important component of their lives. So I think those are the things that we should take seriously.
And I really wouldn't call 15% small, 15% or 17%, whatever it was. That's a significant portion.
Right. But thank you very much, Steve, for doing
this.
Any
other questions of Steve? Steve, on behalf of the board, thank you, and thanks to the entire PROS Commission for all the hard work on this. Very much appreciated.
John Rummel also did a lot of work on it.
Terrific. Thank you.
Is it available? Are we going to make the copy of the report available to public? Or
we can do that. It's not currently on the website. We do have copies in the office, and then we have the executive summaries now. So if that's your direction, we're happy to put it on the website.
I think that would be
the website, at least. You might think of if people wanted copies of cost, maybe duplicating cost. I'm not sure.
Our charge is 20 cents a page, so they can go to the district clerk and get those copies if they want the full study. Otherwise, the executive summary is just a few pages.
Okay, thanks.
Director Villeneuve.
Yeah, I just want to interject that on the preliminary planning stage for the community part, some of these non-existent activities would be accommodated, particularly the soccer, baseball, and softball. And I think if this is one of the things, you get the cart before the horse or whatever, that that movie, where the guy built himself a big baseball diamond out in his cornfield.
Field of dreams.
Yeah, field of dreams. That's what
Kevin
we need
Cosmo.
To do.
Build it and they will come.
Except they've come already. They're saying they want it. So, as you know, that's certainly high on my list of things that we do build that community park that we agreed to with the county when we accepted the money to purchase the land.
I'm going to be too infirm by the time this comes to fruition. So, but nevertheless, I'm fully in favor of it.
Yeah. Knowing your age, I'm saying no, we are not going to be too old. It's going to be done.
Think positive. I do have one request to speak on this item from Mickey Burton. Mickey?
Mickey Burton, Cambria. Now, this is positive, so.
You're always positive, Mickey.
What I wanted to say is because the dog park hadn't been built, firstly, I'd like to thank President Sanders and the Board of Directors and the staff for allowing the community to borrow the land for the dog park. And I'd like to also thank Joyce and John Heller for having the idea and putting it together. The dog park, if you haven't been there, is an overwhelming success. And it isn't just because of the dogs. It's because it's a nice social place. It's sunny. There are benches. People are close together. The dogs break the ice. And it's something we don't have in Cambria. Shamo Park is freezing. It's taken over on the weekend by soccer, and it's more tourist-oriented. And there are out-of-town people that use the dog park. They pull in, and they're real excited. It's a funky little place. It's what Cambria, most people moved here.
Required on this item, and as indicated earlier, this will be posted on the website, and a copy of the entire study or the executive summary can be viewed at the district headquarters and purchased at the district headquarters. We'll now go on to the last item of regular business, which is to consider authorizing an amendment to the general fund operations budget for parks and recreation and fire departments. Is there a staff report?
Yes, thank you. As promised in the special meeting held earlier this month and last month, we in anticipation, or actually we were very conservative, thanks to our finance officer, Patrick Bradley, with how much property tax revenue we thought we might get. And so I itemized in the fiscal or in the discussion section that we actually have, we budgeted for the 2005-2006 budget year to get in $1.4 million, $1,411,000, and the actual tax revenue for that year totaled $1,473,766, and so that resulted in a 4.4% increase, or $62,766. And then based on that allocation or that actual revenue coming in, Patrick has extrapolated that for this 2005-2006 budget year, and we anticipate a surplus for tax revenues of $136,454. What that does is that allows opportunities for some needs that might have come on later identified before budget season, and we have done that. The items that we've listed previously and we're bringing back to you concern the additional lot retirement for fire hazard fuel reduction. There were 28 parcels that we did not anticipate getting turned over to us this year, and so we had to quick move during this fire season to get those cleared, so we had to hire a contractor. And the actual total expense paid to that contractor was $12,280, and that's from existing budgeted funds, so we need to make that allotment specific to that project. Also, with regard to the Bluff Trail project, there is staff is recommending a $25,000 matching fund be available for the Coastal Conservancy grant, just because we don't know and we want to be prepared for any unexpected or undiscovered construction expenses as that project commences next month. And because it is in a tight time frame to get completed by early spring next year, we want to have that money in place. There's a possibility it won't get spent or that total amount won't get spent. We just feel like that is a really good target number for that project, and we would like to have that available in case that comes up. And earlier reported by Joellen is that, you know, we are tracking volunteer hours, we're tracking our hours, our consultant hours and expenses. So it's possible that some of that may not even be expended, and we'll certainly report when that project's finished about the expenses. As reported last month, the tractor and the mower for the East-West Ranch maintenance, we have allotted a $60,000 budget estimate for that piece of equipment. We're currently using an existing piece of equipment that is at the wastewater treatment plant. It is obviously not designed to do open space maintenance. It's for smaller areas. This tractor has been spec'd by Ben Bohr, and Brian Bodie has approved it, that it will be specifically designed for open space maintenance. It allows us to get a really early start on some of it and try to keep on track of it a whole lot better. And that would be for a new tractor, just so you know, for that amount. The other thing that we're recommending this month, or for this budget amendment, is for the reserve firefighter pay increases and then their associated workers' compensation. It's been several years, and I've been here over three, that these folks, these are staff that we do rely on for our 3-0 capacity at the fire department, and it's been, the whole time I've been here, they've never gotten an increase in pay. Linda DeClerc of the fire department did a brief survey for me this week of about eight agencies, and fortunately she did a great job, but they all have different titles than we do for our reserve staff. But I can just look at the wages that are paid and the recommended hourly pay rates that we have in the staff report are falling well within those norms. It's just that they all have different, the agencies have different titles for the reserve staff. So just for the public's benefit, right now we have a reserve lieutenant, we have a reserve apparatus operator, and we have a reserve recruit firefighter. And that's the very basic person coming in and having the interest in doing firefighting. The chief has recommended, and I'm supporting him, to have a separate classification of reserve firefighter, and that's for the personnel who achieve certain certifications, a years of experience. That's just a boot above the recruit firefighter. And so the existing hourly pay rates for those staff members are $8 for the reserve recruit. We're recommending that it stay the same. That's your entry-level personnel. The new position for reserve firefighter doesn't have an existing pay rate, so we're recommending a $9 an hour pay rate. The reserve apparatus on October 1st, the recommended budget amendment is for $15,000, and that should cover the cost. The remaining balance of $24,174, we're recommending going into our reserve account for general fund. So that basically expends the $136,454. And that's it.
Any questions of the general manager?
I guess the logical question then is that if we make these pay raises for this year, then as we build the budget for next year, you're confident that we can continue to
yes. because of those property tax allocations, Patrick, I don't think anybody in the audience is anticipating they will go down. So they'll be in place in perpetuity, probably.
Great. Thank you.
It's obvious that the fire department reservists are not getting rich doing this. I mean, this is just barely above minimum wage. And as far as I'm concerned, you could pay these people 10 times more than what's recommended, and it's still not enough. These people go out and put their lives on the line, and I think this community owes a debt of gratitude to each and every one of them.
I should say, too, and maybe the chief can add in, they work a 24-hour shift. So that means they're there for 24 hours a day on our behalf. Right. And then they're, you know, they don't only work for our agency. They work for other agencies as reserve personnel. So they probably make up a full-time job working at these other agencies. And they are also not benefited. Mm. So don't be surprised if you don't see something in the next couple of years. I'd like to stay on top of this, and the chief and the assistant fire chief have the same feeling. So we are going to watch out for this category of employee as well. They're not, you know, in an association or a union, but they are vital to our organization here in Cambria.
They certainly are, and I just can't emphasize enough how valuable they are to the entire community. We do indeed owe them a debt of gratitude. What is the pleasure of the board on this matter?
I move the recommended action.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded to adopt the recommended action. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion carries.
I think we ought to have this number of board members every time. You know, it really moves along fast.
Absolutely, it does. The talking quotient goes way down. It's now time for public comments. I have three requests to speak. If anybody else would like to speak, please take the time to fill out a form so we can keep this orderly. The first is Doug Buckmaster. The leader of the ranch hands.
Well, the communicator to them. President Sanders and fellow directors, I'm Doug Buckmaster of Cambria. Continue to be frustrated by the district in two areas. First, it distresses me to see the stonewalling on dropping plans to subpoena two activists from the greater San Luis Obispo community. Your unwillingness to drop plans publicly to subpoena, which initially was denied, incidentally, baffles me. It's a great waste of ratepayers' money. It seems that much of your litigation falls into that category. And I believe that Cambria ratepayers would like to see exactly what has been happening to the district's limited funds over the last couple of years, particularly in the area of legal costs. Secondly, I'm very annoyed at the tardiness in posting the agenda for this meeting tonight. It seems almost as if it were deliberate. It should be posted and put on the website at least 72 hours before the meeting. Neither was accomplished. In the same area, tardiness in disclosure, the mitigated negative declaration on the Beach Wells project was even worse. It seems like a stealth project. This district signed off on the MND on August 24, supposedly giving the public 30 days for written comments. However, a legal notice did not appear in the Cambrian until September 8. Over 2 weeks later, the project was not covered in a news article until September 15. And copies of the MND were not placed in the Cambria Library until September 15. This delay is unacceptable, since over one half of the public comment period expired before the public really knew there was anything to address. Also, copies of the MND cost $30 each. Many members of the public are priced out of the educated comment area because of that. In addition, the project is not a simple one at all. Huge pieces of equipment, a 60-foot boat with a derrick, a huge ramp and crane, and wells lasting at least 2 years will be involved. The Native American community never was noticed. There are some major problems with this project. How would the contractor handle spilled fuel on the beach? The mitigation essentially is to print the hazardous materials emergency phone number in the MND. In the future, I hope the district will operate on more of a customer-friendly basis with timely notices of meetings.
Could fill me in on the legal aspects of it, but as I understand it, it just needs to be published. There's not a set time on the publishing, but there was a filing with the county clerk done promptly as soon as it was ready. It was also mailed to the state clearinghouse, so it went off to all the resource agencies. I don't know about the cultural group that was mentioned off the top of my head without researching that some more, whether they're part of that distribution from the state clearinghouse. Unfortunately, it was difficult for us to copy this report. We were surprised that I think one of the local print shops closed its office, and we really wanted to make sure there were color copies in there, not just black and white, because the resolution is lost unless it's color copied on several of those exhibits that were in there. They may have ended up going to Morro Bay to be copied. I'm not quite sure where.
I can comment on the copies. I spent Sunday afternoon at Kinko's in San Luis Obispo making all the public copies available for Monday morning.
I guess I would entertain the question of the board whether extending that date is needed in view of the comment, or if the public feels they haven't been given the enough notice. But we certainly would look at the question on the fuel to make sure that's mitigated properly. The process works by having written comments due by the 26th at 5 p.m., and then the verbal comments can be given during a hearing, which is at 8 a.m. on the 29th. We will have prepared a response to comments for that meeting on the 29th, and I'll make sure that that our consultant team knows that that's a important issue as far as the fuel mitigation that was pointed out, and make sure we have that addressed properly. So that's pretty much. I don't know if that answers all the questions or not. But
the time period of 2 years, I didn't understand that. The project doesn't take that long.
I believe that's related to the two groundwater monitoring wells that go in. And I can't remember if that's 1 year or 2 years off the top of my head. But I know we're doing this in three phases as far as the investigation. And there is a ramp needed for the equipment to go down onto the beach. There's soil borings are the first step. I think there's about six or seven soil borings. They're around 3 to 4 inches in diameter each, and they go vertically into the sand. We are planning on using a special drilling technique that doesn't require the use of drilling mud, so that's a cleaner process. It doesn't have as much waste material. Once we analyze that data, then we decide with our geologist where would those two monitoring wells go where it makes sense based on the data from the first phase. Those go in and they get monitored over a longer term period, but there's not equipment running around. There's basically a couple of pipes about 4 to 6 inches in diameter where they can measure levels and take some sample of water out of if they need to. They would stay in for a longer duration. At the end of that period, be it 1 or 2 years, they're removed completely, we'll make sure that it's kept in the original state. The third phase, as I recall, is there are some sonic reflection techniques they want to use where they put microphones into the sand and into the shallow beach areas and record sound waves to get a better profile of the subsurface conditions. And there's also some conventional drilling that's inshore along the pipeline routes that are in less sensitive areas. So that's pretty much what we're talking about here.
So the actual construction of these wells and things don't take 2 years, but just that after they're completed, they'll stay there and be monitored for that time period. Will there actually
Correct.
Be other... That will there be work being done during that period that could disturb the cultural artifacts?
No. We're going to avoid the cultural resources with this approach, and it's part of the mitigation measures that we're going to recommend for adoption. The monitoring of the wells would be done on foot by a scientist or a technician gathering data.
I think it bears mentioning that the purpose of the wells is to determine whether or not it's feasible to use the so-called beach well intake system. And I would certainly be willing to meet again if there are further questions that Mr. Buckmaster or anybody in the community has about this project. I'd like to ask the district council, the matter of continuing the comment period is not on the agenda for this evening. Would the board be precluded from taking that kind of an action this evening?
I'm not certain if I understood the question.
Well, the request was made that the comment period on the mitigated negative declaration be extended.
Okay, I didn't know if you meant that or public comment. And that is not on tonight's agenda, so the board cannot act to continue that item, which I believe has been noticed already. If it's the board's desire to do that, it would either have to be done at the scheduled meeting, or if the clerk received enough notification that board members could not attend, then the clerk can appear by herself and continue the meeting to another date.
And would we be precluded from accepting comments that come in after the September 26th 5 p.m. deadline?
As far as oral comments?
Oral or written?
The cutoff date normally is, as you stated, for the written comments in that specific date. But people, technically, they'll come in and give written comments. In fact, in some ways, that's better than we have them to look at and comment on later. So it up till the close of the hearing on the hearing date, they have an opportunity to submit comments for that purpose.
Thank you. We'll go on to the next speaker, and that would be Mr. David Broadwater of Atascadero.
Good evening. My name is David Broadwater from Atascadero.
Good evening.
And you probably know why I'm here. I want to talk to you about your plans to subpoena Pam Hetherington and Eric Greening. But first, I wanted to remind you of last year, which was the last time I came over the hill from inland and spoke to you. Remember when you were going to have the Nazis and Ku Klux Klan having a concert event here in the Vets Hall, which was basically a recruiting event, you know, for those white power organizations. And I just wanted to compliment you on the decisions that you made. You were kind of in between a rock and a hard place, but you demonstrated that you have the common sense and the wisdom to do the right thing when you see what it is, and you showed that when there's a will, there's a way, and you made the right decision at that time instead of sponsoring such a vile type of an event. And so I'd like you to apply that kind of common sense and wisdom in this case as well. Now, I've submitted a letter to each one of you, to staff and the attorney, and also a copy of from your lawsuits against the county and the Coastal Commission, this document here, which I showed you last month, which shows indisputable evidence that you actually do have plans to subpoena Pam Hetherington and Eric Greening, who spoke against your Pine Knolls water tank site plan because of the fact that it encroached on a conservation easement. A number of us oppose you, as you know, and have been asking you now. This is the third month in a row, and it's tomorrow. It'll be 4 months since your attorney in this matter, David Cumberland, let it be known that you have plans to subpoena these people over this matter. It's gone on long enough. You've also been asked to document and explain your expenses on litigation. And I know tonight you approved expenditures. And this document here shows that the law firm of Cumberland, Coates, and Dunow received over $5,400 from you, but I'm sure that's not the full accounting of the amount of money that you've spent, a ratepayer's money, on litigation. It doesn't include a percentage of Mr. Montandon's salary devoted to this or to other lawyers, Stephen Kaufman from L.A. and others. So you still have that work to do, it appears to me. But it appears to a number of us in the community throughout San Luis Obispo County, throughout which Pam Hetherington and Eric Greening are quite well known for their advocacy and their honesty, that you're using your subpoena powers in an attempt to bludgeon people who spoke out against a site plan that you had for these water tanks. Now, you're nearly at the point, some minor details need to be...
Harvey of Paso Robles.
Good evening, and thank you again for this opportunity to address you. I'm pleased to hear that you have your permits. It's clearly a project that is of great importance to the safety and welfare of Cambria. And I'm pleased that you have reached a conclusion and you're ready to start working. And so I'm here again to ask you to drop any plans for subpoenaing Eric Greening or Pam Hetherington, especially since you're at this juncture in your and I appreciate the opportunity to ask that. I'd like to make a couple of quotes from the letter that you received. This is for the public's benefit, from Jan Howell Marks last month. By threatening to subpoena citizens for testifying at a public hearing, the CCSD risks liability under the Brown Act, Government Code Section 54954.3C, which states that, quote, the legislative body of a local agency shall not prohibit public criticism of the policies, procedures, programs, or services of the agency, or of the acts of omissions of the legislative body, end quote. For you to retaliate against members of the public who criticize the CCSD in any way, including threat of subpoena, violates the Brown Act. Here's another quote. The anti-SLAPP statute protects any written, oral, or statement or writing made in a place open to the public or public forum in connection with any issue of public interest or any other conduct in furtherance of the exercise of the constitutional right of free speech in connection with a matter of public interest. It protects against the use of the courts or the discovery process to discourage free speech, California Code Section 425.16E. A motion to quash will be granted when there is no information sought reasonably calculated to lead to discovery of admissible evidence in the pending action. And, quote, the use of the machinery of the legal system for an ulterior motive is a classic indicia of the tort of abuse of process, Coleman versus Gulf Insurance. And I hope that you can see your way clear at this point, since you're so close to actually getting your project to remove them from threat of subpoena. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. Is there anybody else in the audience who would like to address the board? If not, the meeting is adjourned to closed session at the district offices.